Okay. This is an atypical shear. You'll take a look. You'll see that every one of the many sources on the sheet are the exact same. Same meaning the same, not the same content, but the same source. And yes, all in English. The history of this particular essay and what we'll be doing from it, we'll get to in a second when we actually start beginning to study it. But what I wanted to focus on now is something we've anticipated since we began Perek Beis, and even to a certain extent a little bit during our study of Perek Aleph, and that is a focus tonight on the seemingly either contradiction or just repetition as well of the story, creation generally, and more specifically, the creation of Adam. The creation of Adam, which is repeated not only in Perek Aleph, but then in Perek Beis. And of course, the repetition itself would be troubling, but the discrepancies are also particularly difficult. So let's review. Let's go back to Perek Aleph. Who can find Psukim? I'll give you a little bit of a hint. Man was created on the sixth day. Just in case we haven't learned anything yet in the last year. What pasuk is it? Perek Aleph? Pasuk? Chavav. Okay, everyone have it. We'll review that. Then we'll go to Perek Beis. And then we'll see if we can detect the differences between the two. And then we'll see if we can put together an analysis of that. Perek Aleph. Pasuk Chavav, 26. Yomer Elokim, God said, Na'asa Adam b'talmenu k'nusenu, let us make man in our likeness and our image. V'yirdu bidgas hayam v'of hashamayim v'behema u'v'chol ha'aretz u'chol remes ha'romes al ha'aretz, and they will rule over all the other creations of the universe. V'yivra Elokim esa Adam, God actually now creates man. B'tzalmo, in his image, b'tzelem Elokim bara oso, man is created in the image of God. And who is this man? Zohar unakeva bara osam. Adam and Chava are both told to us, both the male and the female are created. Baruch osam Elokim, and God blesses them. Bayomer lem, and says to them, Elokim, God says to them, Peru Rabu, you should multiply, O Meluas Aretz, and fill up the world. V'kivshuha, and you should dominate or rule over the world. Urdu. Again, repeating this idea of controlling the world. I hope I read that slowly, or slow enough, and it'll be in your memory just long enough to keep in your mind as we now read Perek Beis. Perek Beis, you can keep a finger on Perek Aleph, only a few pages. Now go to Perek Beis. Perek Beis, Pasuk Zion. We read this last week. One Pasuk here, and we'll see another Pasuk or two in addition. What is the primary creation? Again, it's a repetition is itself a question. But now let's not only focus on the repetition, but what are we told that's different than what we were told in the first parak? But Yitzer Hashem Elokim es Adam, God created the man, Afar min ha'adama, from earth of the ground. We discussed last week where that earth comes from and the significance of the different opinions quoted in Rashi. Yipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, God blew into his nose the soul or breath of life. Are there two stages of this pasuk or one? We also discussed that last week. Was Adam created in one step, or was he first created almost like a golem, as one Mefari said, and only then brought to life? Again, not to repeat what we did last week. Adam l'nefesh chaya. And then this man was a nefesh chaya, a living soul. And we concluded last week's shir with a discussion of what that description means. We saw the opinion of Unkelos, that it means someone who can speak. And we discussed the significance of the ability to communicate. Let's just take a look at a little bit more. That we've already seen. But now let's see two or three more psukim we have not yet seen. The Yida Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden. Hashem planted a garden in Eden. What's Eden and what's the Gan? So that's not for tonight's year, but hopefully we'll figure that out in a future year. Mikedem in the east. Yosem Hashem is Adam. What's important for us tonight is that there is this garden in Eden, and God is planting or placing man in it. Asher Yetzar, this man that Hashem created. Pasuk continues, Pasuk test. Yitzvach Hashem Elokim, Minha Adama, Kalaitz, etc. All the beautiful trees, etc. Then we have some rivers. Skip, skip, skip. We got four rivers. I got one more. And then look at Pasuk test. Vav.
This is a tough decision.
Yikach Hashem Elokim, Esa Adam, and God takes this man, V'yanichehu b'Gan Eden, and again repeats the fact that he's been placed in Gan Eden. For what purpose? L'avda u'leshamra. In order to work and protect or guard the garden. Of course, the next sukkim then tell us about the prohibitions of eating the tree, which trees they can't eat, and certainly there'll be plenty for us to study there. But Ad Kan, that is the end of the basic creation story in Perek Beis. So we just read the creation story in Perek Aleph, now we read the creation story in Perek Beis, and the question now is, what discrepancies can you note between the two? Either something that's in Aleph that's not in Beis, or something that's in Beis that's not in Aleph. What discrepancies? I have four that I'm looking for, but by all means, if you can come up with more, that'll be fine too. There's at least four, is what I'm telling you. So let's make sure before we accept anything, you know, we're a tough audience. In Perek Aleph, which pasuk are you quoting from? Perek Aleph Chav Zayin says what? Le'yivra. Is that the only word that's used by him? I think that's correct. And now in Perek Beis, Le'yitzer. Is there? Asher Yatzar, correct. Okay. That wasn't even one of my four. You're already ahead of me. Good. Anything else? Think. That's not old news. Not today. We haven't mentioned it today. Okay, so Bernie points out correctly. We'll give him more credit than he wants to give himself. Bernie, you win the prize. One second, let me. It is your husband's point that I'm trying to dramatize and give significance to, but whatever. You can take up that with him after the share. In the first parak, only the shame of God, only the name of God that's used is Elohim. And it's only in the second parak here where we have God saying that he is being described as Hashem Elohim, the Yud Kei Vav Kei, the famous, what's known in the Tetragrammaton, the famous, the particular, the ineffable name, the Shema Mefurish, of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, which we pronounce Adoshem, but of course that's not how it's pronounced, if we would be spelling it out phonetically. So there, good. That's number one on my list, or not in that, not in any order, but that's one of the four on my list. I'm looking for at least three more.
Let me get one.
Well, you're half right. Just say out, spell out Min Adama. Min Adama is not a phrase hanging in the middle of nowhere. What is Min Adama? What is this? What is it in Perek Beis? Is it worth old? But just be more specific. You're correct. What about there's just a dirt earth on the ground? What are we told about this earth? We're told, in other words, we're told in Perek Beis how Adam was created. From a clump of dirt. And of course, in Perek Aleph, we're not told at all. That's a very consequential one. That's number two. Okay, I'm looking for two more. Okay, let's, for argument's sake, call that we're told how Hashem created them. Clump of dirt, blowing breath into them. That's all one. That's Allen's. Okay. Harry, you gotta get your own.
He's plural.
Don't take Allen's.
Plural of Perek Aleph, singular Perek.
What is?
Adam.
You mean the relationship? Oh, so just. Spell that out more. Before that, so on the same pasuk, what's right before the Bar Osam, Bernie? Oh, very good. So what do we have? So Adam and Chava are created in both chapters, but in Perek Aleph, it's like simultaneous. They're created at the same time. In fact, we shall see in a future shir that leads to one opinion in the Medrash. I alluded to this last week, that the original Adam was, in fact, du partsufim, a two-faced creature, the front of, or one side, I don't know which one was front, one side having a man's face, one side having a woman's face, but leave aside that very fascinating idea, even if they're both created as separate individuals, the description in the Torah of Perek Aleph is simultaneous, Zachar and Akeva, they're just there, and in Perek Beis, I didn't even get to it, because I was not focusing on this, but everything we read until now is just the creation of Adam, it's only later in Perek Beis, where Adam is taken to sleep, and then out of his rib comes Chava. That doesn't exist at all. So the fact that Adam is created by himself in the first parak, in the second parak, and only later is Chava created, that is certainly different than in Parak Aleph, where they seem to be told us.
The verbs are not plural in Parak Aleph. They're in the same. No, I'm saying,
Oh, some.
Or do.
Well, we don't have any. Do we have verbs yet in the second parak? I'll tell you why. Because so far only Adam is created. So far only Adam is created. That's true, Bernie. But that's supporting that point. That's the 49 point.
Is that a big deal?
I'm not sure. I mean, again, it's that I would put in the same category as your first answer, which is there's a discrepancy, a major discrepancy in how we're told they were created.
He doesn't mention
Salam al-Akim was only in the first para. Good. Good, 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 good. We're going to hit that up tonight. And one more. Okay, shall I give you a hint?
What man's role is.
Thank you. I didn't have to give you a hint. And your wife wasn't even here to chef Nachas. Never. It's in the tape.
She can't deny.
Every now and then you say something good. So just spell that out. What are the two discrepancies before I give you too much credit too fast?
The first is domination, dominion, whatever.
So in the first, Perek, Adam, and Chava are told, Umi, Luis, Arz, Vikiv, Shuha. You should conquer, control the world. And I'm not sure yet. We're not so much what the difference is. You could say maybe it's not such a big deal or not. But it's worth noting that the description of the second paragraph is different. It is not to control or to dominate the world, but rather, la'avda u'lashamra, to work in the world and to guard it. Okay? We could probably find a few more, but those are the major discrepancies in the creation of Adam between the description in Parak Aleph and the description in Parak Beis. Now, there could be, and I'm sure there are, even if I'm not aware of them, individual mafarshim that discuss a ha'ara here, a ha'ara there. I'm not sure how many presentations there are, either in earlier or more recent commentators, that discuss an entire overall approach. It could be that there are those that I'm not familiar with, but it's very likely that in the last 35 plus years, by far the most well-known and influential approach, again, not looking at a particular deal or inference here or there, but as an overall comprehensive approach to the whole creation of Adam, both in Parak Aleph and Parak Beis, is based on an essay of Rav Soloveitchik called The Lonely Man of Faith. The Lonely Man of Faith was first published in a magazine called Tradition in 1965. It was based on a talk, or the basis of it was from a talk they had given a little bit earlier than that, but it first gained wide renown in 1965, and subsequently it has been published as a separate book. Bernie Selden, he owns the original Tradition. I happen to own two versions of the book, because for a while I couldn't find one version, and I couldn't really live without having at least one on my shelf. So now I have two. And I'll tell you, this whole essay, which is not that long, and we'll see, in certain respects it's easy reading, and in certain respects it's difficult philosophical reading, but I can tell you, and I can't say this about too many things, I don't remember the exact year, although I have a basic sense of it, but I can tell you exactly where I was, and it's certainly close to not more than 10 years ago, I can tell you exactly where I was when I read this essay for the first time. I read it multiple times. But it made such an impact on me. It was so arresting. I remember I was reading it on a plane to Israel. I have specific memories of sitting on the plane, being engrossed the first hour or two of that flight, not knowing anything else was going around me. It's not because Allah gave me so much foot room, but it didn't matter. I was engrossed 100% in this book. And in fact, of the two that I have, one of them is from that first reading, and it's like every other word I have highlighted in comments in the margin and exclamation points and stars. I was completely, completely taken by this. And the essay itself in the printed version is at least 100 pages in the book version, which is not as long as it was obviously in the original magazine. And you obviously can't do all of the essay. But at least some of the highlights I've managed to put on. I hope no one has too difficulty seeing that I put it, just to get it onto one page. I had hard enough Xeroxing. If I had to do two pages, three pages, it would have been more difficult. But I put it in 10.5 fonts. I hope everyone can read it. And I want to, again, use some of the highlights, even only covering, you'll see the last source on the sheet is page 51. So just from the first 51 pages, the first few chapters of this magnificent essay. Now, it happens to be that there is a second group of essays or speeches that Rav Soloveitchik gave, which are very similar but not exactly the same, also on the creation of Adam a few years later, which to the best of my knowledge until very recently were only known to those who might have actually heard the lecture. But a few years ago, an organization that's been publishing some of his English philosophical writings called Me'otzer HaRav published the first, and now they have, I think, five or six in their series. The first book was called Family Redeemed, and it's all about, it's essays all about various relationships of either marriage, husband and wife, parenting, all sorts of things that relate to sibling relationships, family relationships. And the first essay of that book, Family Redeemed, is called Adam and Eve. And that essay has many overlapping similarities with The Lonely Man of Faith. It's based on speeches he gave at Stern College a few years later. I think it was in the early 70s. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was 1971 that the basis of that essay comes from. And I specifically am hopeful of my plan, Plinetta, is to probably focus on that next week, because as much as it's similar in his analysis, there he focuses not so much on discrepancies between Perek Aleph and Perek Beis, which he's most famous for. The Only Man of Faith is a world super duper famous essay. This, which is not nearly well known, is that he mamish just, you know, chews all of the life out of mamish and analyzes with such great intensity the actual description just in Perek Beis. Asks numerous questions about the presentation of Perek Beis itself, and then has a presentation which is very important, similar, and complementary to what we'll do tonight. And again, I thought as an order, first we'll see straightforward Perek Beis as it relates to Perek Aleph, and then we'll go back next week, I hope, to more in-depth with Perek Beis. So far, again, let's just keep in mind, we have these basic questions. It's not just the redundancy, but it's the discrepancy between the two presentations. We have Tzelem Elokim and the fact that, you know, how God was, man was created only in the first chapter of Tzelem Elokim, but we don't know how man was created. And in the second chapter, we don't have anything about Tzelem Elokim, but we're told about the clump of dirt and the breath being brought in. We have Miluas Arts V'Kiv Shuha versus La'avdo la'shamra. We have Adam and Chava simultaneous in Perek Aleph, Adam and Chava very separately in Perek Beis. And finally, we have the issue of the Shem Hashem, that in the first Perek is just Elohim, and only in the second Perek are we introduced to the Yud Kei Vav Kei, name of Hashem. Those are our basic signposts, and we'll have to see what our Soloveitchik does with this general idea. So he starts off right in the beginning of the essay with the following. We all know that the Bible offers two accounts of the creation of man. We're also aware of the theory suggested by the Bible critics, attributing these two accounts to two different traditions and sources. In fact, one of, if not the most famous source for the Bible critics to prove that the Torah was not written by God is the fact that there are these two creation stories, which itself, why do you need two things saying the same thing? Let alone they're not sensitive so much as this much, but the fact that there are the nuances, and they suggest, well, if there must be two prokim, what's the obvious explanation, they say? There must be two different authors. So you have kfira either way, by the way. There's two options for the kfira there. You have two gods. That would be heresy. Or, as they more likely say, is that it's two different people or peoples that had two different similar stories that at some point in history got, you know, taped and cut and pasted together, as we would say in the word processing, to make what we call the Torah. That is what the Bible critics, most of them Jewish, although not all, say about this. So says Rav Soloveitchik. So we all know about this. Of course, since we do unreservedly accept the unity and integrity of the scriptures and their divine character, right, this is an anathema to us, because we hold that it's all one, it's not two different things, and it's all written by one divine creator, by Hashem, we reject this hypothesis. Of course, we cannot agree with their answers, but essentially what he's saying is they're asking good questions, but we obviously have to give our own answers because their answers are unacceptable. It is, of course, true that the two accounts of creation of man differ considerably. Critics are onto something, at least in that regard. However, the answer lies not in an alleged dual tradition. This is, again, if you wanted to highlight one thing, this is the basic thesis of his essay. Not in a dual tradition, but in dual man. Not in an imaginary contradiction between two versions, but in a real contradiction in the nature of man. In other words, what he's basically saying is there are two creation stories, because mankind, as a general species, has two very different personalities or components. Now, is it true that there'll be some people who may more lean to one type of personality, one person to more likely to another? But his essential thesis is that mankind as a whole, and most individuals, are made up probably of both of these dimensions. And therefore, in order to give significant, if you will, weight to each one of these parts of the human consciousness and experience, that's why we have two different mentions of the creation of Adam, not Chas v'Shalom, because two different people or two different stories of how it happened. Two accounts deal with two Adams, two men, two fathers of mankind, two types, two representatives of humanity, and it is no wonder why they're not identical. In other words, you're telling me, I got you, you from Jews, because you're telling me they're not identical, and saying, of course, that's the point. If it would be identical, then it would really be a Shiloh. What do we need to have two versions of the same thing for? But because they're describing two different types of people, therefore, of course, it has to be written in two different descriptions. Skipping a few pages, he now says in the second source I have for you. So far everything's good? I mean, we have a question. That's not good. We don't have an answer yet. But you understand. You're with me. There's no doubt that the term image of God, what's that a translation of? So what did we say? Where is Tzelem Elokim mentioned? In Perek Aleph, not in Perek Beis. In the first account, in Perek Aleph, refers to man's inner charismatic endowment as a created being. Now, you may recall at some point before Pesach, I think it was the last year before Pesach, if I'm not mistaken, or second to last year, we had a shiur together on what are the different Mefarshim's explanations or definitions of Tzelem Elokim. So Soloveitchik says, you know what Tzelem Elokim, you know what it means to say God has created mankind in His image? It means that we have the ability to be creative just like the Ribbono Shel Olam. Man's likeness to God expresses itself in man's striving and ability to become a creator. Adam the First, which is a term we're going to hear repeatedly, Adam the First means Adam in Perek Aleph, as he's described in Perek Aleph, as opposed to when he says Adam the Second, he's referring to Adam in Perek Beis. So Adam the First in Perek Aleph, who was fashioned to B'Tselem Elokim, what does that mean? Was blessed with a great drive for creative activity. Adam the First is interested in just a single aspect of reality and asks one question only. How does the cosmos function? He's not fascinated by the question, why does the cosmos function at all? Right? What he's starting now, we're laying out the bricks. We're making it's going to be level by level, layer by layer. His first point is this first Adam in Perek Aleph is one who is part parcel with the natural world, and therefore he's very curious because of his creative impulses. He wants to know about how the natural world works. As opposed to a different kind of a question, a very important question, which is, why is there a world at all? That's a very philosophical, thoughtful question. That, this type of personality is not interested at all, Adam and Perek Aleph. He only wants to know how. And even how, Soloveitchik continues, even that question of how is considered, he's not really the question per se. He's not, as we would call, a lambda, an intellectual. But rather, with its practical implications. He wants to know how it works, because only once you know how it works, you know how to manipulate it, how to, if you know how electricity works, then you can make electrical objects. If you know the laws of physics, then you can create things. If you know the laws of science, etc. To be precise, this question is related to the possibility of reproducing the dynamics of the cosmos. It is nurtured by the selfish desire on the part of Adam to better his own position in relation to the environment. He is completely utilitarian as far as motivation, teleology, design, and methodology are concerned. Utilitarian means I want practical benefits. Right? Two people could want the exact same thing, but for very different reasons. Right? We could both, there could be two children who both want their parents to come to them for yontif. One could do it because they have a sense of hakaras hatov and kibbutz ha'aim, it'll be a mitzvah. And others say, well, if they'll come, then they'll leave. Before they leave, they'll leave a check for all the food that we spent, and they'll have breakfast for the kids, and I'll have a yontif nap because they'll babysit. Some of us are blessed to have both in one set of parents. But anyway, so the point is that those are two very different reasons for wanting the same thing. The latter one is what we would call utilitarian. And it doesn't always have to be bad. But the point is you want to do something, you want to accomplish something, because it has a practical benefit. So says or Soloveitchik, Adam in Perek Aleph wants to know how the world works so he can recreate. If he understands the forces of nature, he can duplicate them. And why does he want to do all this? He wants to have a better life. He wants to accomplish things. He wants to create things. Third, look at page 16 here. Human existence. So he says, this thing, you think it's a bad thing? On the contrary, this creative impulse and the successes that mankind will have with their powers of creativity brings great dignity to Adam. Again, if it's part of our Tzelem Elokim, so it brings us dignity. Human existence is dignified because of its glorious, majestic, powerful existence. Man of old who could not fight disease and succumbed in multitude to yellow fever or any other plague with degrading helplessness could not lay claim to dignity. Only the man who builds hospitals, discovers therapeutic techniques, and saves lives is blessed with dignity. So I don't know, and this is really not the topic of tonight's year, what Soloveitchik's general approach is on a term we're familiar with from Chazal called Yiridas Adoros, this idea of, so to speak, the generations getting lesser, and perhaps in certain contexts he would agree to it. But what he's saying now is literally just the opposite. When it comes to this dimension of Tzelem Elokim, of Perek Aleph and Bereishis, this idea of the dignity of man because of the creative impulses, on the contrary, each generation builds on the previous generations, and we're getting more and more dignified. You'll recall that this relates, I was rushing, but it relates to the last source that we mentioned last week. Right? That was Naim Lom Torah, Zalman Sorotskin, who said the reason that mankind's most unique creature capacity is the power of speech or communication, said of Sorotskin, is because that's how generation to generation can share their knowledge with successive generations and build to create more. And the specific examples, it's on your source sheet from last week. he was talking about general science and other technology. I already in my mind realized last week there was a similar overlap between Sorotskin there and of Soloveitchik here. That is something that as human beings, and all of us, Jew and non-Jew, we're all part of the human race, we have tremendous pride in the fact that from generation to generation, we're accomplishing more and more, and we're creating greater things. His other example, by the way, for the sake of space, I wasn't including everything, he speaks not only about disease and stuff, but you shouldn't just think, oh, if you're a doctor, you're great, which of course is true, but if you're any other technology is not good. He gives two examples, one of the doctor in the hospitals. Another thing he talks about is how it used to be, it takes you, you know, to go from Boston or New York to London, it could take you who knows how long. Because now you wake up in the morning in New York, and at night you're already in London. In the afternoon you're actually in London now. So that's an unbelievable thing. That's an unbelievable thing that mankind is so conquered, the force of nature, that you can wake up one morning in New York, and by the afternoon you're in London. This is an unbelievable thing. Unbelievable thing. That's his other example in addition to here with the health. So all of these things are part of Adam 1, Adam of Perek Aleph, and all of these things are building and building and building, more and more dignity. Civilized man has gained limited control of nature and has become in certain respects her master. With his mastery, he has attained dignity as well. Hence, Adam the first, Adam in Perek Aleph, he's aggressive, he's bold, he's victory-minded. He engages in creative work trying to imitate his creator. In the Tati Odei, Mahu Afata, just like that's what it means to have a Tzelem Elokim. Hashem is a creator, we want to be a creator too. And doing all of this, Adam is the first is trying to carry out the mandate entrusted to him by his maker, who at the dawn of the sixth and mysterious day of creation addressed himself to man and summoned him. So he's already addressing two of our questions. Why is Tzelem Elokim in the first parak? Because Tzelem Elokim discusses man's creative capacity, and that's what's being focused on. So that's why it's in Perek Aleph. Number two, we had asked, again, not in that order, why is it stay? What is the significance of the Kivshuha? And we haven't yet got to the second parak yet. We're only talking about Adam number one now. But why is it Dafka in Perek Aleph, the Kivshuha? Because this mastery, this control over nature, that is very much part of the personality, the type A, that we're describing here with Adam in Perek Aleph. Tzelem Elokim and Kivshuha, they go hand in hand. Okay, look at Of course. He talks about, obviously there's an issue of responsibility. Now, who draws the line where? This is, again, there's a million examples of this, Bernie, you're correct. But it literally goes to the heart of one of the single most pressing ethical issues of our day, which is stem cells and cloning. Certainly cloning. Right? The scientists, who are obviously even the non-Jewish or even the non-religious ones, whether they like it or not, they themselves are, in a sense, heirs to this other Adam 1, right? They're creators, they want to understand, they want to control. So they are unbridled because they don't have any Adam 2. We haven't gotten to that yet. They just see the power of science, the power of creation, which in itself is a good thing. And therefore, any potential ethical issues, you very often, again, there are some scientists who are more conservative in these areas. Again, how to draw the line, these things are not at all simple from a Jewish perspective or otherwise, but that's why you have all these debates, because you have some people who say, how can anyone try to have science? And any limits on science, we might as well be back in the Dark Ages. I just read an editorial, if you're against human cloning, it's as if you live in the Dark Ages. And no gray, and there's no nuance, it's black and white. Either you're pro-science or you're a fanatic. So, it's stark. And how to draw the line with those things, you know, the abuse of technology is, of course, that's one example, and there are myriads of others. It's not at all a simple question. But the basic yisod, are we pro-technology, pro-advancement, pro-science? So the answer is Soloveitchik, absolutely, you betcha. Look in the next section. So now, until now, we've only seen Adam of Perek Aleph. Comes along with Soloveitchik in page 21, which is the beginning of a new section of the essay. He introduces us now to Adam of Perek Bates. Adam the second is, like Adam the first, also intrigued by the cosmos. We're not just some boor sitting off somewhere, Adam the second, not interested, we're curious. However, the cosmos provokes Adam the first to quest for power and control, thus making him ask the how question. Adam the second responds to the call of the cosmos by engaging in a different kind of cognitive gesture. We look at the cosmos, we look at the skies, we look at nature differently. Instead, his inquiry is of a metaphysical nature. It's a more of a spiritual or philosophical way. He wonders, why did the world in its totality come into existence? What is the purpose of all this? Who is he whose life-giving and life-warming breath Adam feels constantly, who at the same time remains distant and remote from all? These are completely different kinds of questions now. These are more of the spiritual, philosophical realm. That's not asked by Adam in Perek Aleph. Those are the questions of Adam in Perek Beis. In a word, Adam II explores not the scientific abstract universe, but the irresistibly fascinating qualitative world where he, Hashem, establishes an intimate relation. He with God. The biblical metaphor, and here he gets now to a very important question. We said, what is different about Perek Beis? We know how Adam was created, by God taking the earth and blowing Nishmas Chaim, right, Ari? Says Rav Soloveitchik, the biblical metaphor referring to God breathing life into Adam refers to the actual preoccupation of the latter with God, his genuine living experience of God, rather than to some divine potential or endowment in Adam symbolized by this image of God. Very different than we saw last week. Very different than, for example, the Unculus. Unculus from the Ramban said, what does that mean that Hashem breathed the life in? What does that mean? That there's some now divine part. That's describing a characteristic of man, that we have some of the divine in us. That's how many Mefarshim understand. We saw that in previous weeks. This idea of Tzal Melukim Ravi B'Chapov. Salvation is now distinguishing. We see Tzal Melukim on the one hand. Of course, that's true. There's this notion of some part of Hashem in us. The image of Hashem, that's the creative impulse. But, says Rav Soloveitchik, that's not what's being told us in Perek Beis. When Perek Beis, when Hashem says, the Torah says, Nishmas Chaim, Hashem breathes some of his life into us. What does that mean? That's not telling us so much about Hashem, it's telling us about us. The fact that there's a part of the human personality that is constantly preoccupied with that outer force, what we call the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever other people call it. We're talking now about universal, we're not talking about Jews now. That spiritual quest, that sense that there's something else out there, there's a meaning to life, that these questions have to be asked, not just how does nature work, but why is there a nature, what am I doing here in life? All of that, says the Soloveitchik, is symbolized. What does that mean, Hashem breathed life? Because it's a metaphor. It doesn't mean it literally necessarily. What it means is that Hashem is in us. It's not like something external. Now, every now and then we may care about something religious, not religious. You know, some people dabble in religion, it's their hobby. No, says Rav Soloveitchik. The sense that people can become, it's part of us, it's in our kishkas. To care about these things, to have a sense of spirituality and metaphysical reality. So that's exactly what the Torah was describing when it says Hashem breathed life into us, in the sense that it's literally part of us. Who is he whose life-giving and life-warming breath Adam feels constantly, and at the same time means distant and remote from all? In a word, Adam II explores not the scientific abstract universe, but the irresistibly fascinating qualitative world where he establishes an intimate relation with Hashem. The biblical metaphor referring to Hashem breathing life into Adam refers to the actual preoccupation of the latter with Hashem, or his genuine living experience of God, rather than to some divine potential. This is now where we're getting the beginning, we're not yet done yet, but the beginning now of two different descriptions. Adam and Perek Aleph is a completely different type of personality. Adam and Perek Aleph asks the how question. How does it work? Because I'm a creator and I want to understand so that I can duplicate, so that I can conquer. Adam II, Adam and Perek Beis, is not so much asking how, but why. In a certain sense, in that sense, again, he's not necessarily yet saying one's better than the other. He's saying it's a different, more contemplative or reflective, focusing not so much on the how, but on the why. What is the meaning of life? And what is the spiritual higher power that could exist? Look on the bottom of the page, he continues. And he's now going to start honing and sharpening the distinction between the two prakim. While Adam the first wants to reclaim himself from a closed-in, non-reflective, natural existence by setting himself up as the majestic being capable of ruling his environment. Adam the first doesn't want to be alone, doesn't want to, Hakmim Chanik from philosophy, from other things. I'm going to be chashuv, I'm going to be dignified. And how am I going to do that? By ruling the environment. However, Adam of Perek Beis, Adam II, sees his separateness from nature and his existential uniqueness, not in dignity of majesty, but of something else. In other words, again, this is philosophical terminology, I want to make this digestible for you. What he's saying is, all mankind of either, if you will, dimension, either personality, has a sense that they're different than the animal kingdom, the natural world, and wants to do things to make sure that they and other people know we're not just another animal, we're separate, we're unique, we're better. But the way you go about it can be very different. The Adam of the Perek Aleph shows their ruling, their creative, their power, their separateness in their mastery. If I can be the lion of the jungle, I can be the master of the universe, the Kivshuha, that shows that I'm not just one of them, but I'm separate. Adam of Perek Beis also has that sense of wanting to show that we're not just an animal, but we're separate, but we do it differently. How do we do it differently in Perek Beis? Look at the second to last line. There is, in his opinion, Adam of Perek Beis, another mode of existence through which man can find his own self, namely the redemptive, this idea of having a redemptive life, giving meaning to things, and that is not necessarily identical with the dignified. Again, this is, again, Adam 1 and Adam 2, and if you wanted to make like a chart for yourself, you want to have a code, a keyword for each one. So, Adam of Perek Aleph is there to lead what he calls a dignified life. Dignified life is the controlling of nature, the mastery of it, for doing wonderful things, not obviously for doing horrible things, for doing wonderful things, for curing malaria and yellow fever and building trains and building highways and building bridges. Unbelievable. Right? Every time I go over a bridge, I'm this fall. Different things strike people differently. If I go to the Swiss Alps, I would assume I'd be this fall from that too. But that's Hashem's work. I'm talking about from human ingenuity. I have no idea how they build bridges. I'm fascinated. If anyone could get like a good book, I'll pay you back. How do they do this stuff under the water? Like, how are they doing that? Not now. Now they have things that can do it. How do they do this thing? How do they build bridges 100 years? I'm like blown away by human ingenuity. It's brilliant. I could barely get through high school science. There's some people, you see the pictures, you know those classic pictures from Life magazine of the old workers like from the Depression, you know, they're sitting when they were building those first skyscrapers, they're sitting there with the bag of lunch hanging out with the legs hanging out over. How could they do such a thing? It's unbelievable. And if you want to really go back further, isn't it unbelievable what the Mayans built, or even the pyramids? I mean, we don't have such love for the love lost for the pyramids. But it's unbelievable. You know, now you just schlep anything. You got hydraulic lifts and powers and cranes. How do they build that without that stuff? When you take the Kotel Tunnels tour and you see how big those rocks are, how do they do it? That's dignity. That's part of the human race. That's our Tzelem Elokim. We could do it. That's the dignity of Perek Aleph. That's the catchphrase. Perek Beis is a different thing completely. Not just conquering and building bridges and who knows what. Not dignity, but it's redemption. Redemption means, liftos means to give meaning to something. And he gives an unbelievable famous example. Who remembers? You know that I don't. When they beat us to space at first. Right? The communists, the Russians, they got there. What was the famous thing? There was a cosmonaut, and he thinks he's a knocker, he's up there, and he calls back to the chiefs in Moscow, and says, what does he say? I don't see any angels. Right? It was like he's confirmed the truth of their atheism. He says, I don't see any angels. Right? He's up there, no angels. Oh, you see, we're right, atheism, there's no God. Says of Soloveitchik, an atheist cosmonaut circling the earth, advising his superiors to place him in orbit that he did not encounter any angels, melee claims a dignity. The Mamers, they got to space. It's an unbelievable thing to get to space. Because he courageously mastered space. He is, however, very far from experiencing a redeemed existence. Dignity is not measured by the inner worth of the in-depth personality, but by the accomplishments of the surface personality. You don't have to be thoughtful, you don't have to be anything. But if you have a surface Chachma, you'll build a bridge. That doesn't mean you're thoughtful. Doesn't mean you appreciate good wine, let alone a beautiful sunset, let alone good poetry. It's not the higher culture. But you can have dignity, and again, in this sense of the word, because you can accomplish, you can build. Dignity can find realization only in the outward gesture, which helps the inner personality to objectify itself, to explain, to interpret itself to the external world. There is no dignity in anonymity. You're not going to say, with this definition, right, I can be alone, and I got my tools, and I can build an unbelievable thing, and no one's going to know but me. There's no dignity in that. In a sense, what he's saying is, again, there's a line, just like what Bernie said before about even the good advances of technology, there's a line, you know, and if you'll get past that line into what we'll call Radifas HaKavod, just doing things to show off, so that's probably not even dignified. That's very undignified. We all know people who are running around for the COVID. It's a very undignified thing. But before that line, there's a healthy sense of, if I'm going to accomplish something, it's got to be in a societal context. What's the purpose of the bridge if no one's gone over the bridge? Not only is there no purpose, who would ever have realized, right? There's no creation until there's a problem. First there's a problem, we've got to figure out how to solve it. If there's two mountains and we got people who need to get one to the other, we have a problem. Oh, we can use our ingenuity to build a bridge. Then you have dignity because you got people who are doing it. I'm not talking about COVID now, I'm talking about dignity. But if you're anonymous, meaning you're doing something no one knows about, no one appreciates, no one uses, says our salvation, that's obviously not dignity. Therefore, now he comes along with Soloveitchik with this. To me, this is, again, every time I review this essay. It's just as mamish. To me, it doesn't write it to me the same.
Just remind me of science versus religion a little bit.
No,
I mean, it reminds me of
and a little bit, a little bit. But again, his point, and this is where, as again, perhaps not all religions, because perhaps Christianity is a little different than us, but Judaism has always seen something very positive in religion, in science. In other words, science alone is lacking something. Obviously, Paragalef without Paragbeis is missing something. But you don't. There's not a single negative thing about Paragalef here. It's wonderful, Paragalef. Some of the statements that have come out from certain rabbanim or rabbinic organizations, for example, pro certain parts of stem cell research or other things. So they basically, you know, the Christians sometimes accuse you shouldn't play God. So I saw a certain Rav had an essay in English that he wrote in an op-ed, right, Judaism believes in playing God. Now I happen to think that's a little bit much for me, just because the way that's going to be read, if no one reads the article, I thought was a little bit exaggerated. But there's a certain truth to that, right? That's what it means. That's what our Salam Elohim is, to try to be creators like Hashem. We don't run away from science. We do, generally speaking, embrace progress in the meaningful sense of the word progress of science. So we're not looking down on science, but of course, in Hanami, right? Science without religion is obviously not nearly meaningful as what it should be. So now, with all of this in mind, says, to me, this is poetry. This is not prose. It's so beautiful, it sings. So now we can understand what was one of the other things we pointed out. Why in Perek Aleph or Adam and Chava created simultaneously? Whereas in Perek Beis, there's this huge gap. First it's Adam, and then he's planted in the Gan, and then there's four rivers, and then there's trees, and then he's commanded about the trees. And only then, we didn't even read yet, will we have Adam go to sleep and Chava is created. Completely different picture. Adam's around for quite a few psukim without Chava. Whereas in Perek Aleph, it's boom. Baro Sum, simultaneous, everything's together, Zakhar on the Keva. So it says with Salvechik, it's all because of what we just said. Because Adam, number one, Adam of Perek Aleph, it's about this dignity of the mastery of nature, and that there's no dignity in anonymity. You need to have a culture, you need to have a society to appreciate your accomplishments. Therefore, Adam the first was not created alone, but together with Chava. Male and female emerge simultaneously. Adam the first exists in society, in community with others. The whole definition of Adam one is using this ability with and in community with others. And therefore, Adam and Perek Aleph has to be created. Zachar and Nekeva, Baro, Son, Adam and Chava are right there. Because there's no meaning to Adam in Perek Aleph without Chava. And that's not a romantic statement. There's a lot of romance in Bereishis and in general in the Torah. That would be for another time. But this has nothing to do with romance. This has to do with the sense of the power. What is the creative impulse? There's no sense of the Tzel Melukim as I'm Salvage, you can understand it. If there's not only are you not using the Tzel Melukim, but there's no one there to use it for, there's no one to appreciate it. There's no dignity in anonymity, says our salvation. Right? Humility is such an extreme that no one should know about me. No one should know what I'm accomplishing. Maybe you score some anava points. Maybe, I'm not even sure. But you certainly don't score any dignity or tzel melukim points. Tzel melukim means you have meaningful, good creations, good contributions. You want people to benefit from them. You don't want to keep them to yourself. And therefore, Adam could not be alone. Adam had to be with Chava from the outset. He elaborates on this point in the next section. Right, Adam Smith, who studied the social contract. What is the social contract? Who can give me two sentences, synopsis? What's the shot in the social contract? Okay. You're all too humble. I'm sure you all know these things. You have PhDs in this. The social contract means as follows. There's 100 of us, and we're plopping on an island. And I know how to do this, and you know how to do this, and I like doing this, and you like doing that. So what's going to be? We'll all do everything. We'll all fend for ourselves, and we'll all starve to death. Because even if I know how to cook, but I don't have time to take care of other things. I may not even have the ability to take care of other things. So social contract is basically saying, listen, if we want to all survive and thrive, we have to work together. Now, if we're going to work together, I don't just get to be my own balabas, right? If I'm doing my own thing, I don't have to answer to anybody. I can do what I want when I want. But if I need something from you, I'm going to have to respect your... Again, each society will have different contracts. But in essence, maybe in America, I'll respect your privacy, and I'll do this for you, and I'll play Social Security, and I'll pay high taxes for you. I'll do things, and in certain cases, not do certain things, because that would violate your needs. You'll do things and not do things, because the sum will be greater, the whole too, will be greater than the sum of the parts. That's called a social contract. It's not that there's something inherently meaningful in getting together and creating a society. It's prudential, it's practical, because otherwise we're going to starve to death. We'll all be corn farmers, and then what are we going to do? How are we going to eat the corn? Who's going to defend us when the other tribe comes to attack us? So make a deal. You'll be the soldier, and you'll be the mayor, and you'll be the farmer, and you'll be the teacher. And we'll all live together, which obviously involves certain compromises, but The assumption is that the whole, the benefits will outweigh whatever negatives, the whole will be good, some of the parts. That's a social contract, which is a philosophical concept that political scientists and others discuss. So says of Soloveitchik, the whole theory of a social contract, brought to perfection by the philosophers of the Age of Reason, reflects the thinking of Adam the First. According to the biblical story, Hashem was not concerned with the loneliness of Adam the First. It's not that you have to live in a society, because if you don't live with people, you're lonely. It's not that. It's that who's gonna go on my bridge? Who's gonna benefit from my invention of electricity? Who's gonna read by the light that I just invented? There's no meaning and dignity and anonymity. So we need other people. That's the social contract. If they're being together, it's a benefit for all of us. It's not that we're lonely. Not only that, neither was Adam in Perek Aleph aware of the pronouncement, Lo tov v'yos Adam. It's not that it wasn't true. Certainly Adam didn't feel lonely. The natural community of Adam the First enhances man's chances for successful survival. It does not elevate his existential experience, since the latter is in no need for redemption or catharsis. There's much more you could say. Of course, I have to be part of the community, right? I speak this until I'm blue in the face from the pulpit. Community, community, tzibur, tzibur, tzibur. There's meaning in a community. That's part of being a mensch, to be part of a community and benefit. That's nothing with Perek Aleph, says Soloveitchik. Perek Aleph, you're not lonely without anybody. You could go to, you don't need a minion, you don't need a Chaver Kadisha, you don't need a Chesed committee, you don't need a social committee, you don't need anything. Or you'd be just as happy with any of them. Nebuch, technical detail, you actually do need them. Because something may actually occur, right? You don't know how to lane, so who's going to lane for you? Well, you got to be part of the shul. I'll go, right? And you're too busy because you're actually a farmer, so who's going to visit the sick? All right, we'll get somebody else, he'll do it. Mela, if we figure out all the things that we need, we'll end up having lots of people. That's the social contract. But it's not because I need it. It's not because it's lonely. Lo tov heyos adam levado. As the pasuk said, in which parak? Only in parak bay, because the concept of loneliness and there being a meaning, an inherent meaning for two people to be together, that's all parak bay's. It has nothing to do with parak aleph, the Adam the First, this creative, dignified, powerful thing. Male and female were summoned by their creator to act in unison in order to act successfully. Yet they're not charged with the task of existing in unison in order to cleanse, redeem, or rally. It's not that there's some higher kedusha or anything. You don't hear any of that in Perek Aleph. You just have Zachar v'Nekeva bar Osam. Nothing fancy, no pshatim, no philosophy, no spirituality, nothing. Because that's not what it's about. It's about you need two people because you need to get things done. Cathartic redemptiveness, in contrast to dignity, that is not experienced through man's exercise of control, right? Kivshuha, control over the environment, rather through man's control over himself. A redeemed life is ipso facto a disciplined life. God summoned Adam the First to advance steadily, Adam the Second to retreat. You think you can do everything? You can't do everything. There are limits. Yesh gvulos to science. There's limits to things. So in Perek Aleph, is Adam commanded do or don't do anything? It's only in Perek Bey that he's told not to eat the trees. There's limits to what you can do. Because part of the redemptive power of the second Adam is in the retreat and things that he cannot do. Adam the First is told, Milur as the Chavshua, fill the earth and subdue it. But Adam the Second is told to serve. Of the Ulashamra, there's the redemption, there's the spirituality, there's the meaning in working, not because of what you'll conquer, but just being there to serve others. He was placed in the Garden of Eden to cultivate and to keep it. L'avdu l'shamra. Dignity is acquired in man, triumphs over nature. But redemption is whenever he is overpowered by the creator of nature. The Torah, the Bible, states this explicitly when Adam the Second was formed from the dust of the ground, because the knowledge of the humble origin of man is an integral part of Adam's I. Experience their sense of self. Adam the Second has never forgotten that he's just a handful of dust. Why is it only in Perek Aleph that we're not in Perek Aleph? We're not told where Adam comes from. Only in Perek Beis we're told that he comes, because Adam the Second he wants to go to the skies. He wants to be the cosmonaut, with or without God. But you could be a religious astronaut too. Right? You could be that Israeli astronaut who made a tremendous kiddush Hashem. You could do that, right? And there are other religions. John Glenn, first man to walk on the moon. He was a very, very, he is. I meant the first man to orbit, I'm sorry. I'm confused. Thank you. They're all good. And happens to their both. I'm not joking. I'm sorry. Yeah, both very, very religious, because they spoke about their relation, the idea of being in the world, looking out at the world. Right? And when he first visited the Kotel, south Tavern walls, you should know, if you go to the, you know, the Kotel is, first of all, if you go to the south, you know, the south southern walls, you have those steps that go up. Those are the steps the Jews used to go up to get to the Beis HaMikdash. So he said, when I visited with the shul, they told me that before it was open to the public, that he was a dignitary, he came visiting Israel, and they let him visit. And his line to them was, walk on these steps to me as a religious Christian is more meaningful than walking on the moon. So you could be an Adam the First, you could be a conqueror of science, to be religious, you don't have to be the atheist cosmonaut of the Soviet Union. But the bottom line is, if you're the Adam of Perek Aleph, what gives you the dignity? You could be, it's not a contradiction per se to Hashem. What gives you the dignity is the conquering of the world. However, he says, when it comes to Adam of the Second, so there, you're embracing, again, it doesn't mean you're a Nebuch, and Echben a Nebuch, and you feel meek, but part of who we are, part of our sense of awe of Hashem in the world, is because we don't run away from, we embrace, we understand what our humble beginnings are, that we are just from a handful of dust. If you look now in the next, we have a few more to do. Adam the First was not called to sacrifice in order that his female companion come into being. Well, it is indispensable for Adam the Second to give away part of himself in order to find a companion. This is mamish poetry. This is so beautiful. Why is it that only in the second parak we're told about Adam giving up part of his rib for Chava, but in the first parak, no, they're just there, boom, they're both there. Because that sense of sacrificing, giving of yourself for somebody else, that sacrifice, that is inherent, that is part of the dignity, if you would say that's a bad choice of words, the redemptive power, the spirituality of Adam the Second. Whereas Adam the First, again, we're not saying that you by definition are selfish person, don't confuse. We're just talking about types here, categories. But part of the essence of what it means to Adam the First is not about giving up of yourself. It's about accomplishing, creating. And that's why in Perek Aleph doesn't talk about Adam giving up something, only in Perek Beis, giving up of his rib in order for Chava. The community fashion gesture of Adam the First is purely utilitarian and egotistic, and as such rules out sacrificial action. You don't sacrifice for somebody else. But Adam the Second, communicating and communing are redemptive sacrificial gestures. The covenantal faith community, in contradistinction to the natural work community, where faith, spirituality, redemptive community, not just working of a kishua, we interpret the divine pronouncement, lo tov heyos adam lado, not utilitarian, but ontological terms. Ontological means the nature of being. So the idea, as we said, lo tov heyos adam lado is in Perek Beis. And it means, in a spiritual sense, I mentioned, for those who may recall, you don't have to admit it if you don't, in a Rosh Hashanah drasha 2 years ago, a little bit based on this essay, I spoke about the difference between being alone and being lonely. Alone means there's literally nobody near you. You're alone. You're in your room at night. But if you're happy with your shalom, with who you are and what you're doing there, you could be perfectly happy and fine. Lonely is something that's psychological or spiritual. You could be with a million people, but if you don't feel right about yourself, or you don't know anyone, we've all been to, you know, get invited to something. My father called me last week. My wife says there's like 3 times on the call ID your father called. It must be important. So I rushed. It wasn't important per se. I mean, it was. I was happy to speak to him. It wasn't because he had anything to tell me per se, but he was bored because he had an old childhood friend who was making a wedding in South Bend, Indiana. He went to the wedding as an old childhood friend. But meanwhile, the childhood friend now lives in Chicago. So you either have the college side, which are from Indiana. My father doesn't know them. And even his friend, all of his other friends are from Chicago. None of my father's friends either. He said, well, are you at a table with people? Yeah, but they're discussing all the politics of Chicago and this moisin and that shul and that rabbi. He says, for once, I could just pretend I don't know any of them. So my father was with hundreds of people and he was completely lonely. He wasn't alone, he was lonely. So he was calling me. I'm glad he did. I'm glad I could call and talk to him a little bit. Right? That's lonely. Lo tov heyosam levado, says R' Soloveitchik, it wasn't said to Adam the First, but even if it had been, it would have meant alone. Meaning, there's no one with you, because Adam the First's dignity cannot be by himself. He can't be in anonymity. The reason it's Dafka told to Adam and Perek Beis, Lo tov heyosam levado, is because there, it doesn't mean alone. Levado means it's not good to be lonely. Because that spiritual being that we are, this Adam the Second, needs to be able to be with somebody, to give to somebody, to share. These are all parts of Adam of Perek Beis. It's lonely. Okay, we have just 2 more paragraphs. The first, Perek Aleph, there's a community, there's lots of people as a community of interests, however, forged by the indomitable desire for success and triumph and consisting at all times of 2 grammatical personae, the I and the thou. There's me and there's you, and we collaborate in order to further our interests, right? That's our social contract. The second is a community of commitments born in distress and defeat and comprises three participants. I, thou, that's you and me, and he. Who's the he? Of course, the Rabboni Shel Olam, where everything finds rehabilitation and consequently redemption. Adam the first met the female all by himself, while Adam the second is introduced to Eve by God, who summoned Adam to join Eve in an existential community. Another great deal. Again, this is Mamish. The Parshanut here is worthy of Radak or Rashbam, and the Drush is worthy of the greatest Darshanim of history. It's Mamish poetry here. Why is it that not only do we talk about all the other nuances we've already mentioned, another nuance we hadn't yet mentioned? Right? Adam and Chava are just Mamish together, Zachar and Akeva. There's no Hashem. There's no introduction. Hashem has nothing to do with the relationship. Only in Perek Beis is it lo tofios al mo'ado. Hashem says, you know, Taka, you know, you need a shidduch. You're getting of age. You need a shidduch. And then Hashem is the one who fashions Chava. Hashem is inherently part of that relationship of Adam and Chava only in Perek Beis. Because the relationship, the type of Adam, the human experience of Perek Beis, is that spiritual redemptive one. And therefore the meaning of the relationship not only between Ben Adam L'Makom, between us and God, even our Ben Adam L'Chavero, our relationships with the people around us of Perek Beis, is of a spiritual, psychological, philosophical nature, as opposed to our relationship with other people in Perek Aleph, is strictly utilitarian. You can do this, and I can do that. Let's conclude with the last part. Majestic man. Again, that's Perek Aleph, Adam the First. He's majestic. He's building skyscrapers and pyramids and flying to London in a day and back. He is gratified by his encounter with God within the... Again, we could talk about a religious astronaut and a religious carpenter within the framework, though, of the cosmic drama. Since the majestic man is incapable of breaking out of the cosmic cycle, he cannot interpret his transcendental adventure in anything but cosmic categories. In other words, the things that he's doing are unbelievable. They are transcendental. But he can't, those aren't his categories. He doesn't think in that term of existence. It's all in the scientific, what he calls cosmic categories. And therefore, what's the one thing that we haven't yet answered? You just threw it out, Bernie, at the beginning like it was nothing. Or Soloveitchik saves the best for last. This is the most important. Everything now, this is the Makom HaPadish of everything from Soloveitchik. The different names of Hashem. And only Elohim in the first parak, Hashem Elohim in the second parak. Why? It's only the divine name of Elohim in the first parak, which denotes God being the source of the cosmic dynamics. Suffice to characterize the relationship prevailing between majestic man and his creator. You may recall earlier in the year we had from Chazal, it's a Medrash, that said Elohim is Midas Hadin, strict justice, Hashem is Midas Harachamim, more mercy. So I don't know if this is a contradiction to that, just a different opinion, or an amplification of it, but this is not Rav Soloveitchik's own. Again, he's applying it uniquely, but it's based on a Kuzari. The Sefer HaKuzari of Yehuda HaLevi, Maimar Dalet in the beginning, right in the beginning, Sefer HaKuzari discusses between with the Melech HaKuzar different names of Hashem. The Sefer HaKuzari says, what is Elohim? Elohim, again, I forget all the words he uses. Shalit, it's the master, it's the powerful God. Now again, you could see why that could be not a distant cousin from Midas Hadin. There's a correspondence. I'm not sure this is necessarily a machlokes, but it is a different focus. Says the Kuzari, Rav Soloveitchik is basing himself here on the Kuzari, Elohim is the powerful, the laws of nature God. Oh, so that's perfect for Perek Aleph, who's all about conquering nature and could have a relationship with Hashem. It doesn't have to be the atheistic astronaut. Could have a relationship with God, but it's strictly that the cosmos, the scientific category, is the natural relationship, and therefore it's only Elohim. However, last four lines, covenantal man of faith, Perek Beis, craving for a personal and intimate relationship with Hashem. There's no intimate relationship with Hashem in the cosmic Elohim encounter. He had to shift his transcendental experience to a different level in which the finite I, the human being, meets the infinite He, face to face, an intimate relationship. This strange communal relation between man and God is symbolized by the Tetragrammaton, again, that's the Yud Kei Vav Kei, which therefore occurs in the biblical account of Adam the Second. And you'll see that also, that Nakud is also in the Kuzari. That's the difference between Elohim is the force, the powerful God, and he says Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, is, again, to whatever extent we can understand it, that's like trying to say there's this powerful guy, and then if you got to get to know him a little better, what are his characteristics, how is his personality, you called him up, you know, you want to find out about him for a shidduch, is he funny, is he outgoing? That characteristics of the personality of Hashem, says the Kuzari, that's Yud Kei Vav Kei. That's an intimate description of Hashem. People may not understand it, but that's what it's conveying. As opposed to Elohim is this more third person, wow, super duper powerful, creating the laws of nature God. That's Elohim. So it's mamish a symphony. It sings like a symphony. It's so beautiful. Everything comes together. Adam the first is one type of personality type, and that describes not only how he's created, why he's created, and also, again, the relationship that he has with Hashem. It could be a religious person, but it's a relationship with Hashem, symbolized by Elohim. Whereas Adam the second is a completely different personality, and that different personality affects two things. Let's not forget, in closing, it affects two things. First is his relationship with Chava, with other people. It's a different, it's a spiritual, personal relationship. Not just you can be the carpenter and I can be the farmer. There's a spiritual, a kindred spirit, a cheshire that people can have together, beyond if you can help me with my homework or not. And the second thing is not only the Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, which is different than Perek Beis, but of course the Ben Adam L'Makom. It's not just Elohim, God of the universe, the super duper all powerful, which is of course true. It's Hashem Elohim. It's that super duper powerful God who I'm craving. I don't always get it, but as a human being, I'm craving, desperate, to have that personal, intimate relationship with Him. That's the Adam of Perek Beis, and that's why it's Hashem Elohim in Perek Beis. Okay, I hope, if anyone's interested and wants the essay in its original form, you can either speak to Bernie or me. We'll be happy to provide it for you. Again, don't be intimidated by it. There's a lot of philosophy there. But as we did tonight, you can chew through the fat and you can get the delicious, delicious meat of this incredible essay which puts these two parakim together. Okay, good night, everyone.